Now let's think about it from their point of view. I really, as I said before, don't want to spend time blaming non-religious family members for doing what they're doing, because you know what? It's not their fault. We are the ones who went crazy. They lived in a normal world, raised us in a normal way, and look what happened. So we're going to blame them for not understanding that. We are the ones who did the abnormal thing. So you can't hold them responsible. Especially when you complicate it with the fact that, I heard from Moshe Shapiro, should be well, that he said that one of the obligations of a parent to a child is to see that their child gets married off. Father and mother have an obligation to marry off their children. The Torah refers to marriage as Al Kein Yazov Odom Es Avi Ve'Es Imoy Ve'Dovak Be'Ishto. Marriage is defined as leaving your mother and father behind. So that means that every parent has an obligation to see to it that their children get to the point where they can leave their parent behind. You have to build independent children. Like I tell my kids, I love you dearly. You always have a home here. But eventually, I want you out of here. I will be a successful parent when you are capable of going out on your own and building your own home. However, as someone who is approaching that Tekufa Sachayim, where I am about to enter Shiduchim, which is I want to get the tape that Rabbi Haber is giving, about how to deal with that particular sugya, it's not easy. To raise a child who is going to be independently minded, and maybe because he's independently minded, and because the Almighty has created the world with this nasty little thing called free will, it could well be that they're going to find their own way, which does not exactly resemble ours. So therefore, the result is that we need to know that as parents, that this is not, or as children of Bali Tshuva, whose parents are not religious, we have to know that when they raised us independently to go on our own way, that is not easy for them. Especially since a lot of what we do, implicitly or explicitly, is a denial of the values that they felt that they were trying to give to us. And that's a very hard thing to have thrown into your face on a daily basis. I tell rebbes in my school that the halacha that says that if there's a lost object that belongs to one's father versus a lost object that belongs to one's rebbe, that a young man finds it, that his obligation is to return the lost object of his rebbe before that of his father. Now that's a halacha, but that's not an easy halacha for a father to deal with. And one should note that it's not true if the father pays tuition. If he's footing the bill, you give me back my aveda. So that's especially complicated if we're rejecting the parents' values and we still need them to help us out financially. That's a very complicated issue. So we have to look at it, we have to try to understand them, and we have to try to see it from their point of view. And the reality is, from their point of view, we truly are the ones who have gone a little bit crazy. They are living the normal American life. We have done things which are unusual. We are, in everything that we do, sending a subtle message that says that we reject what it is that you have done. And therefore, from their point of view, we are kids at risk. That's a reality. Subtle message. We're kids at risk. Therefore, parents come to me, and their kids became religious, and they feel hurt, they feel bothered, they feel unsure, they feel insecure. I say, what have we done wrong? So I tell them, you know, I have to tell you that you know why your kid's religious today? Because of you. Because every organization is perfectly aligned to get the results that it's getting. So you know what? You're the cause of all this. There must have been something that you did that put the spark of Judaism and of meaning in life that your child picked up on. And you might not feel too positively about that right now, but you created this monster. It's a reality. What I'd like to do, I will take questions at the end, but I want to keep my train of thought in there. So hold on to the thought, please, and I'll continue the conversation with you then. Therefore, since it's hard for them, we need to take some time to understand that it's hard for them. And we need to try to do the things that we know to be helpful in terms of building a relationship. To show them that we care for them, to show them that they're important, And then if we do what we need to do, hopefully they will come and meet us halfway or more than halfway and understand a little bit on their part of what it is that we're doing. Now, here's some general rules about how to go about doing it. Number one, it is a klal gadol in relationships that people want to hear about things that will benefit them. Everybody who is ever in sales knows that a salesman does not sell a product. What does a salesman sell? A solution. So if I have a vacuum cleaner and I tell you, you need to buy my vacuum cleaner, so you're not interested in buying my vacuum cleaner. I have to buy my vacuum cleaner. You have to do me a favor. However, if I can tell you that really what you need, you have a bunch of bowling balls lying around in your living room, and you need the small canister auric that can pick up a bowling ball, because that's a big need that you have, so I've got to have it. Because you never know, you're going to have a bowling ball lying around that needs to be vacuumed up. So a good salesman creates a need in his customer. He doesn't sell a product, because that's being a missionary, and nobody likes to be missionized. A good salesman sells a product. Parents, friends who are not religious. If you want to impress them and inspire them and build a relationship, not necessarily to be makar of them now, but to have a relationship with strong so that there is understanding, and that your kids have grandparents, and that you have friends, and that you don't alienate people. And maybe even down the line there will be a possibility that you will be able to be makar of them. So the first thing to know is that you have to show your parents, show your friends, that they benefit because of the fact that you are now religious. You have to show them what's in it for them. Many times, parents and friends who are not religious understand that as the fact that you're now religious, here's all the things that you now can't do. Well, Shabbos is out, and the restaurants are out, and that's why I call this, you used to be so much fun. Because there's not a whole lot that we can do together anymore. You know, as one of my family members said, don't tell me about Shabbos, I know all the things you can't do. Right. So what we need to do is try to show them that as a result of the fact that we have become religious, that their life is better. Generally speaking, that means a focus on mitzvos bein adam l'chavero. Because they're not going to understand that your Shabbos is making you a better son when it means you can't call them. Or your kashrus is making you a better son and daughter when you can't go out and enjoy the family celebrations or go out to the restaurants that you used to. But in terms of chesed, and in terms of kibud av v'eim, so that's something which is a dover hashava l'kol nefesh, everybody can understand that, and that needs to be the place where our emphasis is put. I tell people this, and I think it's very true, you're in conversations with your non-religious family members, kama she'efshar, as much as possible, leave religion out of it. Your job is not, and maybe I'm wrong, I don't know, they invited me to speak here, so I get to give my opinion. I think that you should not see it as your mission that you have to be makar of your family members. What you need to do, first of all, is to be sure that you keep a good, positive relationship with them to the extent possible, so that you do not create a chul Hashem. If we can succeed in not driving people away when there's a strong emotional investment, then I think that we will have gone far. When I was in yeshiva for a while, so I wrote a letter to my parents. And in that letter, it was a letter where I wrote them and I asked them mechila. I was not, you know, the person you see before you today. You know, I also had struggles in life. I wrote them a letter, asked them mechila. I wasn't the worst kid in the world, but kibud av v'eim was not necessarily all the time my specialty. So I wrote them a letter to ask for mechila. So my father wrote me back, and he said, I don't know what they're teaching you in that yeshiva, but whatever it is, I hope they keep it up. He didn't know what was going on. My father went to Cheder as a little boy, but he had a Rebbe. One day he came to Cheder and he came late, and the Rebbe slapped him across the face, so I had to wait till I was 22 to learn all of this. The big achrayas, a person becomes a Rebbe. You never know. So he didn't know. And trying to see it from my mother's point of view, she would meet the parents of my friends from high school in the supermarket. So they would meet in the aisles, and they would say, oh, you know, so tell me, how's Cliff? Oh, Cliff is a brain surgeon. You know, Cliff is on Wall Street. You know, Cliff is a famous lawyer. She said, and what's Steve? That's me. What's Steve doing these days? And my poor mom, Alea Sholem, yeah, she says, you know, I don't know. I don't know. So you have to have a feeling. It's not easy. You know, what in the world is going on, and what did they do to them? And, but the letter that said, you know, I really did some things wrong in the past, and I want to try to do better in the future, and I appreciate what you've done for me. So that is something that not only do you have to do at the beginning, but you have to keep doing, to look for ways in order to improve the relationship. How do you keep the kesher? Because we have chosen a religious lifestyle, so we're probably aware of the fact that there are 365 negative commandments. That means, almost by definition, that there are going to be a lot of no's. A lot of things that we just can't do. Therefore, we have to create a situation as much as possible where we say yes as often as we can. Now, a relationship is like a bank account. You have to keep making deposits. If you know how it is, if you take a lot of money out of the bank and you haven't deposited, then you get this nasty phone call or you get a letter that says that you are overdrawn, we're going to charge you extra, we don't like you. If you're going to build a relationship with someone, you have to look for opportunities to make deposits. With your family and friends, we also need to look for ways that we can say yes. When do you say yes and when do you not say yes? Aseh l'chorav. You need to have somebody that you can talk to who knows you and who knows your family. And I will tell you that there are amazing heterim that I have heard from knowledgeable, reliable rabbanim who can tell you how to negotiate this complicated path of keeping the relationship alive while keeping yourself loyal to your principles and ideals. But you have to find opportunities to say yes. If it's always no, then it's just, why even bother asking? And when your parents and friends know that you do say yes whenever you possibly can, then they will know that when you say no, it's because there is no other choice. And I need to express to you one other thing. Sometimes family members feel that we get some sort of sadistic, moralistic, holier-than-thou pleasure out of saying no. And they need to know that we don't enjoy having to say no. It's just that we have to. I know in my own family, I had family members who only under very recent and difficult circumstances, you know, my mother passed away several years ago, so it was only when we were in the hospital, she was passing away, that one of my relatives was able to understand that I didn't get hana, I got no pleasure out of the fact that I'm not able to have a relationship with a particular family member of mine who's intimate. So that we always figured you kind of feel yourself, you know, up and above, you know, all that. He says, no, it pains me, I'd love to have that relationship. Believe me, I wished I could. They don't understand that because they're used to hearing people who are religious in a moralistic, preachy, holier-than-thou tone. And sometimes they don't understand that we wish it could be different, and if we have to say no, we wish we could say yes. It's the same thing in raising kids. I tell my kids, listen, I wish you could eat brownies 3 times a day, every meal. I wish that's the way it was, that brownies and ice cream had the nutrition and protein and everything you need for strong bones and healthy bodies. Happened to be the Rabbeinu Sha'olam did not make the world that way, and I'm in charge of doing what, you know, conducting myself in the way that he made the world. Therefore, you have to eat your chicken. But it's not, I have no vested interest in you not having ice cream and brownies. It's just that I'm a shliach. If it was up to me, if I made the world, of some things I would have done different. I would have made the pits and avocados smaller. Okay? It's a chaval, waste of space. But you know, Hashem thought it was different. So I would have made it, you could eat, everything could taste like brownies and ice cream. But you know, it's not the way it is. I got to insist that you eat your chicken. It's nothing personal. So family members have to know also, it's nothing personal. And we are certainly not getting any sort of sadistic pleasure out of having to say no. And therefore we have to look for opportunities to be able to say yes, and we have to, in my opinion, be willing to take every legitimate kula that we can in order to keep the relationship. But the key to that kula is that it be legitimate. Because it's a very fine line that we have to walk, but keeping a relationship with family and friends alive is something which is very critical also, and one needs to develop a relationship with a Rav who knows how to negotiate that complicated sea. One needs to know how to balance ikar v'tofel. It's not always black and white. You know, many people, we get into this world, okay, it's usser, it's mutter, it's black and white. As we get more involved in things, we find out that there are varying shades of gray. Again, we need insight to be able to figure out what is the primary thing and what is the secondary thing. I'll give you an example. It's not specifically a Baal Tshuva case, but it's one that's brought down about the Rosh Yeshiva's father, Zichron Levrocha. That I believe, I might have the numbers wrong, but I believe that in Reb Yaakov's family, there were three sons, there were six children. There was three boys and three girls, but there were six children. So when it came time to marry off one of his children, so they had a discussion about how they were going to walk the chassan and kala to the chuppah. There's two minhagim. Sometimes both the fathers walk the chassan and the mothers walk the kala. And sometimes the parents of the chassan walk the chassan and the parents of the kala walk the kala. So the discussion came up in this particular wedding, how are we going to do it? So it was discussed, that was what they did, not in his family, but then there was somebody else who had the same question. So they came to Rabbi Yaakov and they said, what is your minhag, what did you do? So Rabbi Yaakov said, I did it three times one way, three times the other way. So they said, really, what was the determining factor? So he said, whatever the other side wanted to do. If one of his sons, so it was, you know, whatever the kala wanted to do. Because he knew that that wasn't an ikar. So if it's not a major thing, leave it. Not everything needs to be made into a federal case. How do you know? Experience and asking knowledgeable people every step of the way.